Yesterday, the world, or particularly the Western world, celebrated what we call Labor's Day, and that is every May 1st. And if some of us are not aware, or some are not aware, that the Labor Day's origin is from a more communist and socialistic ideology. But I take it as a time wherein I am thankful and reminded of the people who labor in our church, or those who have given their lives for the church. As you know, historically speaking, Christmas Day was not originally a Christian festival, but it was a pagan festival that was turned into more of a Christian festival. One of the attributes of children is not only possessing a childlike faith, but their voracity, their desire to learn. And if you notice that many of them are very curious and will turn to you with a litany of questions. I know I shared this one time in one of our live stream. At a very young age, I did ask my parents where I came from, and they would joke with me, tease me, and mess up with my head, and would say, "Well, you came from a banana tree, or you came from a coconut tree." And I would normally pouch and cry and scratch my head and said, "No, I cannot come from a banana tree. I could not come from a coconut tree." Humanity from time immemorial has asked that same question and decided to embark on an Indiana Jones type of adventure to search and find answers. Man has come up with many scientific theories, and man continues to be in that quest. The general idea of life is eating, drinking, having fun, having a family, a stable job, perhaps, a lovely home, a car if possible, and why not travel around the world, be financially, materially self-sufficient. Then one day, to everyone's surprise, everything is over, and people leave everything behind until Christian hope is given to us. Christians don't believe that that is the end, and that is that juncture in our lives is simply a new beginning. We can add, how about the wonder of beauty and the wonder of creation and the wonder of how the human body functions is another thing. Christianity has helped me and has helped us to understand that life must be seen from a broader and larger perspective. Our creed says God, the good God, created heaven and earth, and then he created man. Not only did he create things that are visible, but even things that are invisible to the human eye. First, from the earth's dust, he formed man and breathed into him the breath of life. The very life that comes from God was given to Adam, and he became a living soul. Christians believe that all life's source is God. At one time, Paul was in Greece and in Athens, and in Acts chapter 17, he said to them, "I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription to the unknown God." Even the ancient Greeks were in search for the God that eventually Paul shared to those who were in Athens. He then shared and, knowing his audience, gave a discourse of creation. Most likely that Paul knew that this was going to be helpful to the Greeks who were listening to him, identifying this unknown God to the Greeks. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth. And he continued by saying that this God does not live in shrines made by man, nor is served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all men life and breath and everything. God is not in need. He is the giver to those who are in need, particularly life. Then in verse 28, Paul utters these very powerful words. For in him we live, in him we move, and in him we have our being. As you know, and you have heard in his letter to the Ephesians about the in Christ, in Christ, in Christ, we have heard it several times. And Paul is quite coherent in his understanding that those who are in Christ live the fullness of life, the life that comes from God. Those who are in Christ move because of the life of God. And those who are in Christ have their being to its fullness because of the life of Christ. Life in Christ, as we know it, is part of something bigger and more significant. Now let's get to the gospel and find out what is the connection. I am sure that many of you have been familiar with John 15, and you have heard this numerous times. You have heard of the story of the true vine and the vine dresser and the branches. As a matter of fact, or in view of this matter, a simple farmer may have more insight than an industrialized cosmopolitan person who sits behind a desk with a computer screen in front of him. Jesus said, "I am the vine." And he said, "I am the true vine. And you are the branches. And my Father is the vine dresser, or the tiller of the land." Christianity believes that the church is God's garden or field. We have heard the organic union between the vine and the branches. The life of the vine flows in and out of the branches. The branch of a tree has life only because it is attached to the vine. As the branch is attached to the vine, it bears fruit. Not by itself, but because of the life of the vine. Jesus is not a mere vine, but the true vine, the source and origin of life. In other words, the God of life, the life that he did breathe into Adam, is now available to anyone who abides in the true vine, Jesus Christ. From the words of Rudolf Bultmann, a Protestant theologian, he said, "There's a difference between mundane life, everyday life, which what we know is life. That's what we are aware of." He said, "There's a difference between everyday life and the life that Christ offers." He said, "No natural life is true life unless it is coming from the true vine. The life that man really longs for can only be had in association with Christ." In other words, abiding in Christ. You and I may live our lives every day, but those who abide in Christ will live a different kind of life. "I am the way, the truth, and the life. I came that you might be saved and have a life in abundance." And it's not only seen from a materialistic standpoint. The life of Christ and the life that he offers to us is truly abundant. One of the awe-inspiring phrases Jesus uttered was, "Most assuredly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain." Most likely, these words meant nothing to his disciples and to those who heard them until his resurrection. And then Paul explains what Christ's crucifixion and resurrection means. He said, "It is the fulfillment of the Old Testament, where where a curse is someone who hangs on the tree. In other words, Paul is saying that the reason why Christ hung on the tree was to destroy the curse that Adam and Eve brought into humanity, and destroying the handwriting of the human debt by nailing it on the tree or the cross. Saint Irenaeus saw the cross as the tree of life, contrasting it with the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The early Christians' art indicates a close relationship between the tree of life and the cross of Christ. The cross of Christ, the wood of suffering and death, is for Christians the tree of life. In the tomb paintings of the second century is depicted the symbol of victory over death. They believe that in Christ's death, he destroyed death, made it ineffective, and paved the way for life. The early Christians followed suit and saw death in the same way, victory and not defeat. And in the same token, Christians in the 21st century, as one day we will all face our mortality, should not see death as a defeat. It should be victory. Because those who die in Christ will be resurrected. Some of the writings of the church fathers points to the tree of life in the midst of the garden as Jesus. The tree of life was never mentioned until the cross, until Saint Irenaeus interpreted that the cross is the tree of life. In other words, ironically, the crucifixion and the resurrection of Christ, his hanging on the cross, is the tree of life that brings life to all of us. Not only receiving life as we know life is, but a life, a kind of life that originates only from God. Hence, we can really say that Jesus is divine. From the words of the prophet Ezekiel chapter 47 and verse 12, he said these things. Along the bank of the river, on this side and that, will grow all kinds of trees used for food. Their leaves will not wither, and their fruit will not fail. They will bear fruit every month, because their water flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for medicine. As you all know, fruits and vegetables are seasonal. There are certain times of the year that you cannot buy certain food or fruits that you like because it's not the season. However, what Ezekiel is saying is that this vine and this tree or the trees will keep on bearing fruit unceasingly. That means Ezekiel is saying and speaking about the true vine and the branch, which is Christianity, and those of us who are abiding in Christ. The tree that Ezekiel is describing is productive continuously, bearing crops and fruit, yielding its fruit every month in a never-ending supply of life and yield. By the time we get to the book of Revelation, the power of Christ's tree of life / resurrection is said to transform the world, and its leaves will be for the healing of the nations. The cross is the tree of life. You and I have been grafted into the tree through the sacrament of baptism, that your life and my life as branches of the tree will bring forth fruit and healing to the nations. Saint John did not understand it as something reserved for eternity, or that it will happen after death, though its effect will continue then. The effect and what the tree of life will give to all who trust in Christ will sustain, the tree of life will sustain believers here and now as we partake of Christ. In ending, I have to say that the fruit that the gospel is really talking about is love. There is no other fruit that is expected of the branches but love.